Not remarkably, his boyhood hero was inventor Thomas Edison. Imagine Claude's excitement then to learn that he and Edison were actually distant cousins. In school, the boy excelled in math and science. In his spare time, he built things, sometimes complicated things, such as sophisticated model airplanes, radio-controlled model boats, once even a telegraph system hooked up to a friend's house half a mile away. And Claude Shannon kept building things most all of his life. Chess-playing machines, maze-solving mechanical mice. But he was especially proud of one contraption in particular. He called it the ultimate machine, the most beautiful machine. To many encountering it for the first time, it was the most disturbing machine. Just a box, it appeared to be, like a small suitcase. But there was a switch on the outside, one switch. And when you flipped that switch, you got the surprise of your life. Not surprising are the enormous contributions of Claude Elwood Shannon to tomorrow, specifically in the fields of mathematics and electrical engineering. Graduating from the University of Michigan in 1936, he went on to MIT as a research assistant, received a master's and a PhD 4 years later, but it was his master's thesis, a symbolic analysis of relay and switching circuits, which opened the door to something called digital circuitry, the essential building block of modern computers and telecommunications equipment. His 1948 treatise, A Mathematical Theory of Communication, established the basis for information theory, added new terminology, a whole new language, to the standard technological dictionary. Today, of course, Claude Elwood Shannon is remembered as the beautiful mind who laid the theoretical foundations for modern mass communications. He's called the father of the information age. And yet amid the litany which comprises his extraordinary legacy is one outstanding, initially unnerving invention created in the wake of the accomplishments for which he is now hailed, a device he called the ultimate machine, the most beautiful machine. That small suitcase with the solitary beckoning switch. Go ahead, flick the switch, and you'll hear a buzzing, whirring machinery engage. You'll see the lid of the case open slowly, and then from inside a hand will emerge, a very real-looking mechanical hand, which then reaches down and turns the switch off and retreats into the case as the lid closes, and that's it. That is all that it does. But what a wonder it suggests. Because even after the turbulent brainstorms that swept humankind into the information age, the awe-inspiring Claude Elwood Shannon recognized, as had Shakespeare long before him, what a piece of work is man. That was the great genius. Tipping his hat, that was Mr. Shannon's ultimate tribute to the greatest designer of them all, the inventor of the human hand. And now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. We're happy to have in studio District Attorney Dan Dow of San Luis Obispo County. We're going to get a handle, talk about getting a handle on crime in California and the importance of Proposition 36 on the November ballot. Want to talk to Dan about this latest Supreme Court ruling, City of Grants Pass for Oregon versus Johnson, which hopefully will empower law enforcement to deal with some of our homelessness issues. And then other topics like public integrity, major fraud, human trafficking, and also current events. I mean, the news cycle has been crazy for the last 10 days or more, and I think I have a feeling it's not going to slow down. So, Dan, welcome back to Protecting What Matters.
Thank you, Barry. It's great to be back with you and with your listeners.
Yeah, and so, folks, call it. This is your opportunity to ask the man. Call in with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Dan, before we get started on some of these very important state and local matters, I'm curious to know about the work you did when you were deployed to the Middle East last year. I take it you're a member of the JAG Corps?
I am, yes.
So to the extent you can, tell sure. us a little bit about that experience.
Well, I served as the Deputy Staff Judge Advocate to a two-star general command called Task Force Spartan under Operation Spartan Shield. We were headquartered in Kuwait, not too far from Kuwait City. And we were the higher headquarters for Army elements all around the region, from Israel, Jordan, Syria, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Jordan, that whole region, which is what the United States military calls Central Command. So we were working with our partner military services, with our partner nations, trying to promote collaboration and ultimately peace and security in that region, all the while trying to ensure that we would diminish the capacity and the political will of the Iranian-backed militia groups that were wishing us harm, as well as wishing our best ally in the region, Israel, harm. I happened to be in Amman, Jordan on October 7th when Israel was attacked by Hamas, and we actually had soldiers in Israel preparing for a training mission that was going to happen the next week. That had to be canceled. And then I was also in the higher headquarters for the three soldiers that were killed by Iranian-aligned militia group drones in January 28th of 2024, the first time we lost any soldiers overseas since the tragic withdrawal from Afghanistan a couple of years earlier. And so it was a very busy deployment from September through April. And I'm proud of the hard work that so many of my colleagues did while I was there. My job was to be the number two, basically the second in command for a legal office with about 22 staff. That included attorneys, paralegals, administrators, and providing legal advice to the command, and working on administrative investigations. Some were military justice issues if soldiers got in trouble, and fiscal law, contracting, operational law. That's the part of, we also sometimes call it humanitarian law. It's the law that applies to governments when you're engaged in a conflict, an armed conflict. And so what guides us are things like the Geneva Convention, but also our agreements that we have established, written agreements, security agreements with our partner nations that we are their guests in their countries, and making sure that every one of the operations that we do, that our command, our unit wants to do, complies with all of the requirements, the things that we've signed up for in advance and said we'll abide by these rules, that sort of thing. And then, of course, if push came to shove and we were engaged in direct kinetic combat, then ensuring that the command is making the necessary analysis to ensure that the targeting did not unnecessarily include civilian casualties. And so we apply our training and humanitarian law, the United States constitutional law, to that analysis and provide advice to commanders who then make decisions on whether or not they can hit a particular target based on all of the factors that we have to consider. So it's a very interesting job. It's different than what I do as a DA, but I've now served in the Army since 1989. I had a four-year break from 97 to 01, but now over 31 years service in the Army, and I don't regret it at all. In fact, I can't quite imagine my life had I not joined the Army.
Well, thank you for your service, and you thank your family for letting you do this.
Absolutely. My kids have never known a time when I was not in. My wife and I got married after I was on active duty in 1992. I got out at the end of 97, and I was out until 01, and that was before we had our kids. But my wife has now stood with me. We together went to Korea in 92 to 93, right after our marriage. So we spent a year
Was she in the military overseas. Too?
No, she was a civilian civilian wife. We were newlyweds. She got a job at the PX on the base in Korea. Then, you know, fast forward to 9/11, which happened just after I got back into the National Guard. And I ended up deploying in 2003 for under a year, but close to a year, then going to Kosovo. And then later 2010 going to Iraq, and then just this last year going to Kuwait. So she's now been with me through three kind of contingency deployments, and through 1 year overseas in Korea. So we're definitely an Army family. And my kids, you know, I've missed a lot of their birthdays and special events that they have just due to military commitments. But I think they're they've been very supportive. In fact, I had an opportunity to retire from the National Guard before that deployment, and had almost done that, but I wasn't ready to give it up. And my kids finally, and my wife said, if you want to stay in, we fully support it. And so I have a lot to be thankful for them.
Cool. I have two active duty.
That's outstanding.
One, my daughter-in-law has been in 20 years and my son, 19.
Army both? Both
Army or both. Their MOS is the military police.
Okay.
And
do they serve together?
Yes. Same yes. Location. And I got two grandsons. They're in South. They're Fort Lost in the Woods.
Missouri.
South Central. I've been there. Waffle Country. What is that? Waffle House Country. Anyway, yes. Just real quick. I didn't want to. This is great. I love that information. But what do you think about targeting and trying to protect civilians? How's Israel? You know, that's an impossible situation in Gaza, isn't it?
It's definitely impossible. I mean, war is war. War is hell. And, quote, innocent people, non-combatant life, loss of life is practically unavoidable in any war, particularly when you're doing combat in an urban environment. And so one of the specialties that the 40th Infantry Division has is fighting in an urban environment. In fact, we were involved in some training. Brigadier General Robert Wooldridge, who happens to live in our county down in Rio Grande, he is very concerned about this and specially trained in this, and he helps to train other military forces in the urban environment, how to conduct warfare in that environment. There are a lot of things you have to be concerned about. But at the end of the day, you know, the international law that governs it is that the value of the target, military target, has to outweigh the loss of innocent life, basically. I mean, that's just kind of, if you boil it way down, there's a lot of factors. But when you have, when you have a very high value military target, then you're able to, sadly, to justify more loss of other lives through collateral damage because of the significance of that that target for your military mission. Of course, our goal is to overwhelm the enemy force with great odds in our favor. We want to outnumber them probably 10 to 1 if we can, so that we win the war decisively, but we never want the loss of civilian life. And so it's something that we as Americans and Israel as our partner take it very, very seriously.
We got a caller. What's your question for Dan?
Hi, Dan. Thank you for your service. I did have a question. There was a program here on this radio station that you're on right now a couple weeks back, and it was on Karen Vealey's part of the Sound Off from Cal Coast News, and she had a industrial disability retired Pismo Beach female police officer that was beaten up, and I guess her chief was also beaten up by an assailant. And it sure sounded, I don't know if you're familiar at all with the case, he was stalking hotels and stealing stuff from different hotels, and she had had contact with him, and she contacted him that day, and things went south when she tried to handcuff him, I guess. Probably should have called for backup before she handcuffed him, but that's Monday morning quarterbacking. But it sure sounded like this guy, from all his previous commitments and things that he had done, and then that it should have been a he should have got a little bit stiffer penalties. And I was wondering if you, and I don't remember his name, and I don't remember her name. I don't know if you're familiar at all with the case.
I am. And what's your first name, sir?
Greg.
Greg. So, Greg, thank you for the question. And in fact, I was thinking about this particular case before we came, before I got into the studio, because the complexity of what we do as prosecutors is enormous and probably hard to imagine for those that have never been exposed to it personally. But we have to weigh and balance many, many things in determining how to resolve cases. And let me just start by saying that our hearts go out, my heart personally, to this officer, female officer from Pismo Beach, who was injured in the line of duty doing her job. And I have to say, we've got amazing law enforcement professionals in every agency in our community that are willing to run into the face of danger so that you and I can be protected. And I've got the utmost respect for them, including this particular officer. Now, it just happens that this case is on for sentencing tomorrow, so I'm going to be a bit guarded on what I will share publicly because I don't want to at all affect that proceeding that's coming tomorrow. What I can assure you is that we take crimes against peace officers very seriously. And while they are willing to do a dangerous job that might subject them to resistance and abuse by the public, they never deserve it. And every time they're injured, we will do, and we do everything we can to hold offenders accountable for that specific act. And so it's, I actually, with the first DA in San Luis Obispo County, to create a crimes against peace officer vertical assignment where a deputy DA is assigned all of those cases to review them and make sure that we don't somehow overlook them. And I was finding before I created that unit that in some cases, I think unintentionally, deputy DAs or people handling the cases subtly might treat them less seriously than if it was a civilian victim. And I wanted to make sure that we didn't ever let that happen. Every victim matters, whether they're wearing a uniform or not. And I want the cases to be resolved in a manner that reflects that. So in this particular case, we had to weigh and evaluate all kinds of things. What I will tell you that's already been a public record is that this individual did not have an extensive criminal history. He had two misdemeanor prior convictions, one from 30 years earlier, and then one from within a year of the current offense. But it was also clear that there were mental health crises happening with this individual, so we had to consider all of these different factors. Ultimately, the defendant was convicted by his plea to three very serious crimes. One is called residential burglary. That's a strike offense. It's considered a serious offense under California's three strikes law. The other two offenses that he pled to were, one was a felony battery on a peace officer. The other was a felony resisting and applying force while resisting to a peace officer causing injury. So really at the end of the day, what we dismissed were some of his petty theft crimes, but we required that he, and he agreed to pay restitution on those. And so they were considered minor. Since Prop 47, theft is considered a very minor offense in California. In a minute, we're going to talk about this initiative to enable us to charge felonies on thefts, which I'm highly supporting. But all this to say is that I can assure you that while this particular officer may not be happy that the defendant, that we didn't make an agreement that would cause this defendant to go to prison for many years, I and my management staff are confident that this was a reasonable disposition, even considering the, you know, the horrific tragedy that this officer went through. Thank goodness she wasn't hurt worse. You know, he's sentenced to the maximum he can get and still have probation. So he'll, if this happens tomorrow, he'll be sentenced to 1 year in the county jail, and he'll have to do felony probation for the maximum time that the law allows, which is only 2 years now because of our legislature changing it and the voters. But he will be on probation, and if he violates probation during that time, he would then, the only sanction would be to send him to prison for a violation. So I understand the concerns of this officer and of other people who maybe don't have all of the facts, but we have to weigh and balance and consider multitude of factors. And at the end of the day, my staff is confident that this is a reasonable resolution similar to what other people would get for similar crimes in our community.
Well, thanks for your call.
I appreciate your candid answer, and I wish the laws were somewhat different to where he could. I really do think he should be subject to stiffer penalty, and I know maybe your hands are tied on that. So, but anyways, and I didn't know about the coincidence of his sentencing, but I know there's only so much you can say. So I do appreciate your time and your answer.
Thanks for your call. Okay, speaking of crime, and I want you to take your time on this. We're talking about next, we're going to talk about the Prop 36, the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act. I know you're really on top of this one, and so why don't you unpack what this is all about and how it could help our crime and some of the things you were just talking about, really.
Yes, thank you. So we the people in California, the voters, we voted and passed in 2014 Proposition 47, which incidentally the authors, the people that wrote it, which was George Gascon, the DA of now of Los Angeles County, then he was the DA of San Francisco County, and some other people helped him with that, proposed this. In the language, they called it the Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools Act. And so when people reduce a new law to four words or five words, those words have meaning and import to a voter. And so they were marketing it through television ads, billboards. Hey, if you want safe neighborhoods and safe schools, vote for this. But what did it do in actuality? It made felony drug offenses for possession of drugs, all of them, misdemeanor. You could have fentanyl, you could have cocaine, you could have heroin, you could have methamphetamine in large quantities. And if we couldn't prove you were selling it or distributing it, then we could only convict the person of a misdemeanor, even if you had five prior convictions for possession of marijuana, or not marijuana, of any of these hard drugs. So it reduced that. It reduced theft so that we could not use our I know you got a break, but yeah. It made it so that theft could not be charged as a felony if you had prior convictions for theft. And so that's a couple of the things that we're going to deal with.
Yep, and we'll continue this conversation on the other side of the break. So folks, please stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Rigotti. Kimberly Cheadle has resigned as Secret Service Director after facing withering criticism for what she admits was the agency's failure during the assassination attempt on Donald Trump at his rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. House Democratic Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar.
Members on both sides of the aisle called for her resignation, and I think that was the right decision.
President Biden will address the nation tomorrow about his decision to end his reelection bid. Fox's Jared Halpern has more from the White House.
From the Oval Office, the president says he will speak to Americans about what lies ahead and his plans to finish the job following his decision not to seek re-election. He has not had public events this week, though he did call into a campaign meeting with Vice President Kamala Harris yesterday.
The address is scheduled for 8 p.m. Eastern. America is listening to Fox News.
Okay, Rich, I walk into your store here at the Mattress Specialist. I see just literally hundreds of mattresses, but I also spotted something else, a massage chair?
Yes, Gary, we've got a massage chair. No, it's not $4,000, $5,000, or $6,000 like Costco. It's only $1,300, and it does all the stuff, and they're very, very comfortable. So yeah, people kind of come in and check them out.
Thank you, Rich Linden. The Mattress Specialist, located at 13th and Riverside, Paso Robles.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with District Attorney Dan Dow. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Dan, why don't you continue on this Prop 36 thing before we were so rudely interrupted by the bumper music. So, continue your thought.
Even KPRL has to pay your bills. So
there you
thanks
go.
To the sponsors. Prop 47 in 2014, we the voters voted for it largely because it was called Safe Neighborhoods and Safe Schools. And because it really wasn't that, what it did was it decriminalized drug possession. It made it to where judges didn't have discretion and DAs no longer had discretion to charge a felony on a case with a defendant who's maybe been to court 10 times before. It used to be that we could charge possession as either a felony or a misdemeanor based on their criminal history, based on their repeated attempts at being going to drug treatment. And if you charged a felony, you could force treatment because you could hold over their head the possibility of getting incarcerated later. By the way, prior to Prop 47, in 2011, the legislature passed a new law called Realignment, which removed all drug possession defendants from prison, even if they're sentenced to long custody. They could only be sentenced in the county jail. So the idea of them languishing in prison was no longer an issue by 2014 because they could only go to the county jail. However, the other issue that I was just starting to talk about was theft. We had on the books the ability to charge a third theft conviction as a felony prior to Prop 47. That was eliminated. And you've heard a lot about, hey, if you steal up to $950, it's a misdemeanor. It's really treated like a ticket, and you're given a date to show up in court. And people that are stealing, and they're just given a ticket and told to show up to court, they don't bother coming to court. Mm-hmm. And so we're finding, 2 weeks ago on a Friday morning, we had a defendant with 9 cases. 7 of them were petty thefts from Walmart, from this store and that store. They never got into court because their convictions or their crimes are considered petty, and the jail can't hold them. And so they're back out in the community committing more theft. So we've built into Prop 36, which is our initiative. Your listeners can go to voteyesprop36.com or casafecommunities.com and learn all about it. They can sign up and join the coalition. They can get more information. But we're going to help address the issue of homelessness, which has been added to because of the inability to compel drug treatment for people that are addicted to drugs, for the inability to prosecute theft crimes. And so these folks that are out in our community that should be held accountable are able to commit this crime over and over again without accountability.
We have another caller. What's your question for Dan?
Hey, Dan. What, if all, is the experience here with law enforcement and, like, the illegal immigrant situation and, like, people not having identification or not being from the country? Is, have you had an issue with that in this county? And how are you guys doing with it?
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, so with regard to illegal immigrants or people that are here that aren't documented, we don't typically consider that because it wouldn't necessarily be relevant for the purpose of the crime. If we learn about it, now, as you probably know, if you've been paying attention, I can tell you have, the California legislature has made it unlawful in California for local law enforcement to work with the federal immigration officials on cases of needing to deport them. And so we're very limited in what we can do. But what I will tell you is that in our community, if we have, you know, somebody that's here that we know for a fact, you know, is here and shouldn't be, I mean, I certainly consider it a factor because if they weren't here, they wouldn't have committed that crime at all. And I think of a dear friend of mine as the DA in San Joaquin County. They recently had a triple homicide 2 weeks ago where the person who was here illegally and had been deported 6 times for committing crimes in the U.S. Brutally murdered a woman that he had tried to become her lover, if you will. And he brutally murdered her and 2 of her 3 children in front of the 3rd child by burning them to death. And this was a person that should not have been in the United States. He'd been deported 6 times and he was back again. And so, frankly, we have to consider immigration and its effect on crime. We know for a fact that those that are coming here illegally, unlawfully, are bringing in fentanyl, which is being produced, mass-produced in China, being shipped in through Mexico across our border and into our country, and fentanyl is killing a lot of our young people, not to mention is putting a lot of money in the pockets of the cartel in Mexico. So there is definitely a nexus in California. I have not seen a huge percentage of crimes in San Luis Obispo County committed by those that I know for a fact are here unlawfully. But as a country and as a military guy, I believe very strongly in the fact that we must make a very top priority the protection of our nation by ensuring that people only enter that have been cleared, that have been vetted, and that that don't mean us harm.
So going back to Prop 36, you know, what are the key elements of the of it that would help tamp down what we're seeing in our what used to be vibrant cities and beautiful parts of California? What would it do actually?
Well, it's going to help get people off of the streets by allowing us to enforce theft and drug crimes in a way that holds them accountable for a significant period of time. But it's going to also provide drug and mental health treatment for people who are addicted to hard drugs such as fentanyl, cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine. Because of the decriminalization that happened in 2014, our drug court population went down. The people actually saying, okay, I need drug treatment, I want drug treatment, that number went way down in our county and all over the state of California because there was no negative sanction if they didn't do it. They're like, well, if there's no punishment, if I don't do treatment, why would I sign up for that? That's hard. It's hard work to go through drug treatment. So this measure is going to allow the courts to mandate drug treatment and mental health treatment for people that are addicted. So that's going to help because if they don't succeed at it, then eventually there will be a sanction, which could lead to incarceration.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, but as a parent, I know that, well, and I'll just say as a kid, I know that I learned from my parents disciplining me when I did something and they gave me a minor punishment and then I did it again, I got a more significant punishment. That's how I learned. That's how we as human beings learn. So that's going to help. The other thing is we talked about fentanyl. Fentanyl today is not classified as a hard drug in California on that schedule of classified narcotics that are deadly and dangerous. So this initiative will add fentanyl to the list of hard drugs, allowing, prohibiting the possession of them while loaded, while carrying a loaded firearm. It's going to permit judges now to use their discretion to sentence a drug dealer to state prison instead of county jail when they're convicted of trafficking hard drugs in large quantities, or if they've been armed with a firearm while engaged in drug trafficking. How is that going to help our communities? Well, right now, the people dealing these drugs know that they're only going to be punished by going to county jail. It's just not treated as a serious crime, and so they're selling it much more openly. In fact, we had down at our homeless safe parking site, you know, incidentally, we called it safe parking near Kansas Avenue and Highway 1. And we prosecuted a woman there who was selling hard drugs, selling fentanyl to a younger man who took it and died because he bought this fentanyl from her. We prosecuted her. The jury had a hung jury verdict when they came back, and we ended up resolving the case for prison. But this initiative will help us ensure that those selling hard drugs will have some significant penalties because they're killing our kids. They're providing a service to people who are homeless and already down and out, and they are going further down the gutter by this rampant drug sale, merchandising in right. their communities. And so that's one thing. But one thing that's really important is it'll provide a warning to all drug dealers and manufacturers, a legal warning that tells them that they can be charged with murder if they continue to traffic in hard drugs like fentanyl and if someone dies as a result. And so those are some of the things that Prop 36 is going to give us as prosecutors.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question for Dan?
Hey, Dan. Hey, Barry. Hey, Dan, you spent time in the Middle East. You used to see those people walking around the Middle East with no right hand because they stole something. And they're actually pretty prevalent. And also, too, what about Albania during the time of Stalin, communist regime? Well, you could go in Albania, walk anywhere in Albania, all the doors were unlocked. And I tell you, they had no crime because if you go do a crime, you get sentenced by a magistrate that day, and you go to prison. And one thing people noticed is people never came back from prison.
Right.
Well, thanks for your call.
Yeah, and I... While I appreciate you bringing that out and the distinction, I don't think you are advocating that we necessarily adopt that system here because we We do want a system where the government has to have plenty of evidence to, you know, to convict someone, and that it's, if we're going to take away their liberty or have a significant punishment, we want it to be, have a high burden of proof, because we value liberty so much. But you bring up a good point. When I was in the Middle East, in Kuwait in particular, less so in Jordan, but in Kuwait, I felt safer in that city, Kuwait City, than practically any city in the United States that I've been in, because it's a very polite society. And I'm sure they do have a, you know, a harsh legal system, but you certainly didn't see the drug addiction or open homelessness and drug addiction and theft going on there. If anybody was not a Kuwaiti citizen, but they were a third national working there, if they wanted to keep their job, they obeyed the law, because they would immediately, if they weren't sentenced to prison and significant consequences, they were at least deported out of their country and said, you're never welcome back.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's wrap up here on 47 and obviously Proposition 36. You know, why are so many Democrats, including the governor, so opposed to cleaning up our cities? I mean, what is your take on that aspect of it? What are they missing?
I think nobody wants to admit failure ever. Mm. And they have to admit that Prop 47 was a colossal failure. They told us it would give us safe neighborhoods and safe schools. It did the exact opposite. It put people that formerly would have been held accountable for their crimes and given a timeout. It put them on our streets. There are folks that go that weren't given the tools necessary, the treatment, the housing, the jobs, and the training that they needed. They were just put right back onto the street, and they immediately started into this cycle that never ended of theft, of drug addiction, and no jobs, and homelessness. And so Prop 47 was a colossal failure. It made us less safe. And I think that's why they're so dead set against this initiative and any of our legislative attempts to try to correct the law. But the people of California, all across the political spectrum, I hear from Democrats and Libertarians and Independents and Republicans all across the state are saying enough is enough. I'm sick and tired of seeing these smash and grabs. I'm sick and tired of seeing people defecating on the streets in Los Angeles, even in San Luis Obispo, we had it. Do you remember Sam Blakesley, our former state senator, took a picture of a woman defecating in front of the mission in San Luis Obispo, who was a homeless woman. And look, I have compassion for her and for people that are in that state of mind. But the problem is that our, quote, compassion in decriminalizing crime made it such that they were now easily in a situation where they could avoid help. They could avoid getting into the systems that are created to help them get out of the gutter. Yeah. And so I don't want to criminalize homelessness. What I want to do, though, is give back to prosecutors and judges the discretion to say, you've been convicted of theft 10 times. I think it's time that, you know, we up the sanction instead of a slap on the wrist. No, now you're going to be charged with a felony, and you're going to be given an opportunity to go to prison or county jail for a significant length of time, and we up the sanction every time. Yeah. We've got to do that. That's the only way you're going to change behavior.
So last month, the Supreme Court ruled in City of Grants Pass, Oregon versus Johnson, that enforcing ordinances against outdoor camping does not constitute cruel and unusual punishment. So is this going to give you some additional tools, the law enforcement in your office, some additional tools to deal with this homelessness stuff?
Yes and no. The earlier decision basically said that you can't arrest somebody for the misdemeanor crime of sleeping on public property or sleeping even on private property if the community has beds available, if the community has beds available and the people are not taking advantage of them, that was the only way that you could prosecute it. And so cities and places were having to say, well, we have housing available. We're going to offer that to them first. And if they refuse that, then we can prosecute them. But most cities and counties in California and the other states that were affected under this ruling just didn't have, as a practical matter, the resources to be able to now have function is to run people around, try to find them housing, put them in housing from the law enforcement perspective, right? This shouldn't be a law enforcement issue. There are other agencies within the government that should be dealing with the homelessness issues. And so, but what this ruling did was it said, hey, there are There are ways that the government can prohibit homeless camps from being in public areas. And so it didn't so narrowly limit our options. So it depends on the city now who is going to take this this law and carefully craft changes to their policies and to their ordinances. But I can tell you probably most of California is going to still be very cautious about using criminal enforcement for homeless populations. Now, already in our county, we had good collaboration with the cities and the police agencies and also the social services to say, if there are crimes being committed while they're sleeping in an area where they really shouldn't be, if they're committing battery against someone, if they're committing theft against someone, if they're committing even environmental crimes of dumping unsanitary and chemicals and other things in the stream beds, we can prosecute them for those crimes. What we just were really not able to do was prosecute people for not having a place to sleep.
Okay.
So we weren't prosecuting them for that. So this is going to change at some level, I think, the policies of cities and police departments and how they're going to approach the homelessness issue. It will give them some more tools to be able to clean up areas of their community where they don't want the unsafe, kind of hazardous situation, living conditions that we have.
Okay. How's a good way for people, give those websites again on the Prop 36 so people can support it?
Yes.
You got there's a lot of support. I went onto the websites. They've got a lot of cities and municipalities and all that. And folks, you need to do this.
And we have people, we've got the mayor of San Francisco, London Breed, on the far left side of the spectrum. And we have, conservative people here at John Pashong, Supervisor Pashong has endorsed it. And as well, Supervisor Don Ortiz Legg, a Democrat in our community, has endorsed this. We've got Karen Ray, the Arroyo Grande mayor, has endorsed this proposition. And this is just a few examples of the fact that it's a bipartisan initiative. It's not seen as far right or just a public safety only initiative. This is one where everybody can say, we want a safe community. We want a community where our businesses are allowed to be open and thriving, as opposed to having to write off literally locally probably tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars for theft. But we know statewide billions and billions of dollars have been written off due to the rampant theft across the state of California. So the way you can learn more is go to VoteYesProp36.com. VoteYesProp36.com. The other URL that will get you there is CASafeCommunities.com. I would invite you to please go in, sign up to endorse and support it. You'll get on probably an email address that you can opt out of, but you'll get some information about it. And then please share this site with everybody that you know in your networks, because we've got to end the crisis in California of not being able to enforce theft crimes, of not being able to enforce drug treatment for people that are severely addicted to hard drugs. And we've got to be able to stop this rampant trafficking of fentanyl, which is killing youth in our community. And all of these will help to reduce the likelihood of people entering homelessness, because we're going to deal with their addictions with mandated treatment. We're going to people that are repeat thieves are going to now be able to go to jail and be incarcerated and have some punishment for what they did. And that's going to help largely make our communities safer.
We got about a minute left before the break. I hope I can get this question in. I know last week you attended the National District Attorneys Association's conference, and I'm interested in those types of groups. But my question really is, are you seeing a pullback of progressive leftist DAs and prosecutors around the state and nationally, or is this still an ongoing problem?
There is definitely an ongoing problem. There are, the quote-unquote progressive prosecutors that choose to do things like George Gascon, not prosecute crimes, not prosecute when you have lawful, enhancements that you can charge for crimes. So I did see that that's still an ongoing issue. But here in California, we've got two counties, George Gascon, that has a great opponent in Nathan Hochman. And then there's a recall election in Alameda County to remove Pam Price from office. And the fact that these two contests are out there and the fact that the public is behind Prop 36 tells me there's hope even in California.
All right, folks, stay tuned for the last segment. We're going to talk national issues.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Neil Cavuto, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages kicking off the new trading week higher as investors weighed President Biden's departure from the presidential race. Tech stocks were the biggest winners today following last week's sell-off, while energy declined. Shares of AI darling NVIDIA jumped over 4% after Reuters reported that the AI chip leader was working on a version of its new AI chips for the China market. CrowdStrike stock plunged again, falling 13% today as investors weigh the impact that Friday's tech chaos will have on the cybersecurity provider. Shares of CrowdStrike dropped Friday more than 11% after its faulty software update triggered a global tech outage. The Dow winners, Microsoft, Salesforce, and Amgen. The Dow decliners, Verizon, United Health Group, and Disney. The Dow up 128 points, the NASDAQ up 281, S&P 500 up 59. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Donald Trump Jr. here. Since January of 2021, the cost of living has increased by 17.9%. You can't get that money back, but you can stop your losses by diversifying into a gold IRA from my friends at Birch Gold Group. To learn more, get your free info kit on gold IRAs by texting the word SHELTER to 989898. That's SHELTER to the number 989898 to get your free info kit from Birch Gold now.
Message and data rates may apply.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Hi, I'm glad you could make it.
Wow, your house looks amazing.
Thanks. We just had our whole house painted by Peak Painting. They even refinished all of our cabinets.
They did a beautiful job. I really like the colors.
They had their in-house designer help me with my color selection. The whole process was so easy. You should have them do a free estimate at your house. Just go to peakpainting.com to book an appointment. That's peakpainting.com.
I'm pulling it up on my phone right now.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peakpainting.com.
Painting services come with a 9-year labor and materials warranty. Some exclusions apply. Contact peakpainting.com for details. That's Peak Painting, peakpainting.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Dan Dow, Slo County District Attorney. Next week's show will feature Marina Bernheimer and Laura Ochoa of CASA of San Luis Obispo County. And then we're going to have Edward Ringback. He's the Director of Water and Energy at the California Policy Center. So that should be an interesting show again. And call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Dan, I'd like you to take on current events of the world, state government, national government. Take these last few minutes. You know, it's been, 10 days since former President Trump was shot at and somebody died in Pennsylvania. We've got... it was a great RNC. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it while you were gone. And J.D. Vance, I think it's very cool that we have a millennial on the ticket. So what are your thoughts on, and of course, and we've had a whole bunch of stuff happen today already. So I'm just going to let you roll with this one. What are your thoughts?
Yesterday was Monday, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I said to my staff in the morning, I said, I hope you're, because I was gone to the conference last week, and I said, I hope that last week, the decade that we all experienced last week was okay for you, because so many current events and things that happened just in the news cycle, one right after another, that certainly made it seem like it was a lot longer than a week, beginning with the former president being nearly assassinated. And let me just start with this, too, since we're kind of creeping into the area of a little more partisan politics, is I want to make it clear. People know that I'm a registered Republican. I am... conservative, but I am fair, and I'm the DA for all in our community, whether they be Democrat, progressive, conservative, independent, And I will not ever implement the authority that I have as a DA in a partisan manner. I think it's a critical component for an attorney general or a district attorney, obviously for a judge, to implement our authority in a way that is fair to all and does not give favors because of political preference or any of that. So I want to start with that premise, because I think that's important in our country.
Yeah.
That, you know, but the other side of it is I often get criticized. Oh, well, you're a Republican, therefore you're, you know, you're biased. It's like, okay, wait a minute here. I mean, that presumes that there are people who are truly, you know, non-thinkers that don't have their own perspective in life. And they're, I mean, every single human being has their own personal preference and their own personal bias that's going to decide what they like more than others, right? Some people like ice cream. Some people hate ice cream. I don't know who those people are that hate ice cream, but
certainly not Joe Biden.
So, right. That's true. I've seen a lot of pictures of him eating ice cream, but, so my point on this is just to illustrate the fact that there are no people out there that are, unless you're a robot, that can just come in and pretend to be, you know, truly independent. I mean, you'll be able to trust people over time through seeing if what they do matches what they say. And I've been the DA, been fortunate, blessed to be the DA for 10 years. And I believe that I have at every opportunity when it comes to the duty that I have as a prosecutor, when it comes to enforcing the law, that I have done so in a way that was completely fair and unbiased with regard to my political viewpoints or that sort of thing. Now, are there things that I think are more important than others because of maybe the worldview that I have? Absolutely. I think that the leftist agenda for progressive justice is just flat wrong, because we've seen over the last 10 years that it's led to unsafe communities. It's led to a huge rise in crime in California, and violent crime, I might add, not just the low-level, what used to be called low-level theft crimes. We've had increases in violent crimes, and I believe it's largely connected to the fact that many more people that would have had a more significant sanction for more low-level crimes are now out in the community without any check, and so they're getting involved in more violent crime. And by the way, the homeless, they commit violent crimes against other homeless too, not just to people that are not homeless. So in that context, I'll kind of comment on the last things. I mean, this attempted assassination, the thing that I was really personally concerned about was that the director of the Secret Service had not resigned or been fired on the day that the shooting happened. I mean, you know, hours and hours after the assassination attempt happened, we knew what had happened, and yet the mainstream news organizations were refusing to say this was an assassination attempt. Even Fox News called it a security incident during a rally, yeah. And Trump was taken by Secret Service away due to some security incident. It's like everybody that was on the ground, each one of these mainstream news organizations had people on the ground that heard the gunfire. They saw what happened. They saw the blood on the former president's face. To me, as a guy that's been in the military for a long time and now in law enforcement, and I think somebody with some common sense, if you look at what happened, the Secret Service has one job. That's to keep any threat like that from ever coming near one of their protectees, right? And so how anybody could think that 150 yards away, rooftop, was not the most important place to station a Secret Service person is complete and utter failure. It is reckless endangerment of their protectee. It's a dereliction of duty to the very highest degree, in my opinion, whoever made those calls. So in my opinion, the right thing to do was for that person to resign or be fired. I'm glad to hear that this morning she did what she should have done last week and resigned.
So let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Because we got about another minute left.
Okay.
Were you district attorney when Kamala Harris was the attorney general?
Yes, I was.
Well, any quick comments on her abilities?
Well, she certainly was not a line prosecutor. She did not work very well with the rest of our district attorneys. She was very political, and she's talking now about being a prosecutor and having all that behind her. But really, in reality, she was the elected attorney general, elected DA in Sacramento, that was not very tough on law enforcement.
Yeah. Dan, thanks for coming in. We'll love to get you back in before the end of the year.
Thank you.
Folks, appreciate have a great week. It'll be another exciting one, I'm sure. Take care.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazonbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.